Hey, what's up, everybody, and welcome to another podcast from another world. If you were checking in to find the next of the Victor Crowley-Ween, unfortunately, it's not going to happen this week, but it will happen next week. Again, check out the update podcast that I released last week and just kind of get a reason why. I won't really go into everything here, but I thank you guys so much for listening to everything. But Dave was gracious enough and Julie to put together this episode. And so you're going to get their bonus podcast this week. And then next week we will get the culmination, the ultimate episode of the Victor Crowley-Ween that has been going on all month. So thank you guys so much for listening. And please enjoy this episode on dementia with the podcast from another world.
Anchorage from Polar Expedition 6. Anchorage from Polar Expedition 6. Can you hear me? Over.
Pat, I mentioned these other solar systems merely to indicate that life can and does exist on other planets as well as our own.
It sounds like, well, just as though you're describing some form of super carrot.
That's nearly right, Mr. Scott. This carrot, as you call it, has constructed an aircraft capable of flying some millions of miles through space.
The world's greatest battles was fought and won today by the human race. At the top of the world, a handful of American soldiers and civilians met the first invasion from another planet. And now, before giving you the details of the battle, I bring you a warning. Every one of you listening to my voice, tell the world. Tell this to everybody wherever they are. Watch the sky.
Welcome to another episode of the podcast from another world. We are your hosts. I'm Phantom Dark Dave.
And I'm Julie.
And this is the Halloween episode. We're so excited to be here. It's been a while.
It's been a long while.
It's a spooky season.
It is a spooky season.
Even though our personal last episode wasn't so spooky, it was cool.
Yeah, it was.
So hopefully cool, you guys... Ice. Yeah, you joined us for a little vanilla ice action. I know for a lot of us, that was the first time we had ever seen the movie or heard of the movie, and it was such a wonderful experience.
It was.
And hopefully we got to share it with a lot of you guys out there, but I know lately... Everybody's been in the horror mood,
so we had
to jump on the horror wagon, which I'm ready to be there for it. But Brian's been doing the Hatchet series, which you haven't actually seen.
I have not.
Yet.
Yet.
And it's something that I actually just watched. Like, I had always seen the original, even a couple of times.
Yes.
But never really ventured out to watch the sequels, which I know is weird because I'm a sequel guy.
True.
But that's just kind of, you know, one of those things.
Yeah.
But...
Didn't you watch all of them in one day?
Damn near. Yeah, so the other day when you worked late, Brian's recording these episodes, and I was like, you know what? I'll go ahead and watch these movies so I can enjoy these podcasts on a different way. Because usually I let Brian do the podcast, and then I let that do the convincing of whether I'm going to watch it or not.
Yes.
But something like a Hatchet 2, 3, 4, I was like, well, I've already seen the first, so I should go ahead and watch the sequels. And luckily, they were all streaming on Amazon Prime and Tubi.
Nice.
So, yeah, you worked late, and I knocked out Hatchet Part... I rewatched the first one just to kind of keep it fresh.
Okay.
So I watched 1, 2, and 3, and then I went and watched Part 4.
Nice.
And so some people might be scratching their heads because they're like, but Brian hasn't covered 1, 2, 3, 4. And that's because we got to talking, and we decided to change it up a little bit.
Yeah.
Originally, you know, Brian was going to do 4 episodes of the Hatchet series, and then we were going to kind of... be the icing on the cake for October and have kind of the Halloween weekend. But I think Brian just really wore himself out because he's doing the 31 and 31.
Oh, he's doing
He's running
so
the YouTube,
right
he's running the Instagram, and he's podcasting
it's
every
impressive.
Week. So we're going to give him this week off, let him kind of get a head start on the Victor Crowley episode.
Yeah.
And kickstart on those cool things he told me about for November that I'm not going to spoil. I'll let him tell you at the end of his episode. So, like I said, we're joining that hoarder train. Mm-hmm. And today we are talking about a personal favorite of mine. It is from 1963, Dementia 13.
The funeral ceremony is today.
Kathleen's dead for 7 years.
Why do you keep having the same ceremony over and over again?
Castle Halloran is a very strange place. The kind of place you'd expect a ghost to like to wander around in.
And it's haunted by Kathleen.
How did she die?
She drowned in the pond.
You remember all those years ago with the dreams, faces in the shadows?
They're Kathleen stars. One of you has a brilliantly imaginative and sadistic mind.
There's something in this house.
Tell me what happened.
There's some things you don't understand. Not yet.
Okay, Julie, so to start out, I want to know, have you ever heard of this movie before?
No, never.
Okay. And that's
not
okay.
Not even in a mention.
Not even in a mention. Yeah, this movie doesn't get mentioned a lot. I think ever since podcasts were a thing, there's been some folks who have covered it.
Mm-hmm.
But this has always been a B-movie and kind of even on that lower grade of B-movie because it's not like a monster movie or a sci-fi movie. This is just a run-of-the-mill drama slasher. And I hate to even categorize that because the experience you get, to me, I believe is so much more.
Oh, yeah.
But I'll tell you about that in a minute. I know the first time you've seen it because it was literally an hour ago.
It was.
In preparation for this podcast when we made the decision, let's do this movie for our episode of October.
Yep.
Now, it's crazy that you never heard of it. Did you know anything about the movie? Do you know anything about Roger Corman, the guy who produced it?
No, his name was familiar.
Sure.
And I don't know from where,
okay,
but familiar. I've heard his name. And then the director,
okay,
Francis Ford
Coppola.
Yep, I'd heard of him.
Okay,
I am not sure that I've seen any of his movies either, but he's a little more well known to me.
Well, he is now, yeah.
Outside of that, I had nothing.
Okay,
And then I briefly looked at the synopsis when we were about to watch it, just to kind of get an idea of okay, what's this going to be about, and even that, it. That was just a teaser, because there's so much more to it than
there is.
What's in that. So.
I like the way you describe it. You're like, Roger Corman sounds familiar. I don't think I've seen anything. And Francis Ford Coppola, he's famous, right?
I feel bad. I'm sure they're
don't feel bad
very
because
big names, but I am.
Well, they
heard
are.
Of them.
They actually really, really are.
But
and that's why
all.
We're doing this podcast, is for anybody that hasn't seen this movie. Heads up, if you've never listened to us before, thank you for checking us out today.
Yeah.
But we spoil. And I know if it was me, regardless of what I said a minute ago about Brian's podcast, that's something special because Brian's like a brother to me. But I traditionally don't want people to spoil movies for me. So if you've never seen Dementia 13 and you don't really want to know anything about it, go ahead and stop the episode because this movie runs hour 6 minutes, hour 15 minutes, depending which version you watch. But there's like, it's totally easy to knock out.
Yeah.
And I will say, this movie has always been one of those $3.99 very poor quality visual on DVDs that you can get. A really kick-ass VHS cover, I will say, if you get the right one. But you can always find it for, like, this movie always pops up in one of those, like, 50 movies for $15.
Oh.
You know, it's always scraped in with something.
I can see that.
Probably in the public domain, to be honest, which is cool because that means we won't get in trouble for playing the trailer.
Nice.
But this movie deserves more credit than I believe it's ever gotten.
Oh, for
and
sure.
That brings us to why we're actually doing it right now. I didn't tell you this, but okay. I briefly told you earlier that, you know, hey, this thing hasn't been able to be purchased in high definition, so I want to watch. Okay, and so that's going to tie into a story about when I first saw this movie. Ooh. But for the longest, you couldn't just buy this movie in HD.
Really?
It was always the crap quality, and I think that's mostly because people are like, why would we invest in, you know, I'd say refurbish, but
yeah.
What's the word I'm looking for? Like, redoing the movie, making it better,
yeah.
You know, everything. So I'm going to kick
polishing
myself later.
It.
Polishing. There you go. We're going to go with it. A polished. This isn't a turd, okay? Because I know the term polished turd. This ain't a turd.
No, it's not a turd.
But this movie just got released in 4K a month ago.
What?
Today.
Oh, wow.
So you know how it's in our Vudu account?
Yes.
So I bought it clearly within the last 30 days because it just came out.
Wow, that's crazy.
And I always check, and it's always the standard version, and I'm
yes.
like, nah, because I got the DVD.
Oh, yeah, you already have that
but
version.
But I always find myself just rechecking certain things, and I looked for this movie, and I saw the cover was different, and then it said director's cut. I knew right away
Ooh.
That thumbnail is new, and
yeah.
I looked on there. I didn't even care. If it said HDX 4K, the price makes no difference buying it, and I
Dang.
Bought it. Little did I know, it was in preparation for this Halloween episode.
Now
and so,
you know.
I'm going to tell you about the first time I heard of this movie.
Please do.
I
am curious.
Love this story, and it's going to plan future episodes for us, too.
Oh, wow.
It's tied in.
Okay.
So, about 10 years ago, there was a Stephen King documentary that aired on the Turner Classic Movie Channel, and it was called A Night in the Movies, The Horrors of Stephen King.
I do know who Stephen King is.
There you go. You're on the right page. Hang with me now.
Okay.
So they brought Stephen King on there to talk to him about what it was like growing up, watching horror, being into horror, and they wanted to know, you know, you're like the master of terror, but
right.
what scares you?
Ooh,
right?
That's a great
and,
question.
You know, I saw that that was advertised, so I set that thing to record. I was wanting to watch that, and I got to watch it, and it opened my eyes to so many cool things. I mean, to sit there and hear Stephen King talk about what it was like as a college kid to go see Night of the Living Dead in theater back in 1969.
Ooh.
I mean, they, like, bring it back now so
yeah.
we could get that experience, but in the heyday, and
oh, yeah.
that movie revolutionized what zombies was, you know, I just couldn't imagine. But Stephen King also talked about, like, he talked about a lot of movies, right? He covered what it was like to see Halloween, Texas Chainsaw, I mean, all the go-to, yeah. But there was two movies he mentioned that I had never heard of.
Okay.
And as a huge horror fan, that was rare for me.
Right.
Okay.
You know just about all horror.
One of the movies I won't tell you because it's going to be another episode.
Ah.
You have to wait and see.
Yeah.
And it's a movie I love.
Okay.
And we do own it.
Ooh, I like
it. And
this.
I've told you I loved it, so when I point it out to you, you'll be like, oh.
Oh, yeah.
And the other one was this movie, Dementia 13.
Interesting.
And they showed a couple of clips, and I was really intrigued in it. And hearing about the making of this movie and everything.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you asked, you were like, I know Roger Corman's name. It seems
yes.
to be often attached to things. But what? So, Roger Corman, he's kind of like, how do I explain? He's definitely the king of B-movies.
Okay.
He's a lot older than Lloyd Kaufman. But, you know, Lloyd Kaufman is the whole trauma thing.
Yes.
And Roger Corman's the whole, like, there's a, I didn't bother to look it up, but they say that he's the only guy that could, like, walk in a phone booth with a quarter and leave with $3. Like, he turns profit on anything.
Wow.
The man is brilliant.
Yeah.
He's actually my number one regret of all time of not meeting, because
oh.
I told the story of knowing Roger Corman
mm-hmm.
as the guy who produces the real cheesy sci-fi original horror movies, like Sharktopus and all that stuff.
Oh.
And don't get me wrong, like, I'll watch it for fun, but CGI is a big turnoff for me.
Sure. So,
not to mention a movie that's, like, heavily done as CGI.
Yeah.
But I didn't realize Roger Corman was the guy that did the Poe cycle, all the Vincent Price, Edgar Allan Poe movies
wow.
from the 60s, and I stood right freaking next to him.
What?
While he was sitting at his table drinking a Starbucks coffee, and nobody was there to get his autograph. He had no line. Everybody was there, and I had no idea.
My mouth is gaping open right now.
It rips my heart in half because he is he's very old. He's still with us, and I don't know what his health is, but at this day and age, it's it's tough. But just thinking, like, I could have met Roger Corman face to face, had picked, because he doesn't go to conventions. Like, that's not his thing. And so that was kind of a once in a, I'd say, maybe definitely a once in my lifetime experience. Yeah. But anyway, Roger Corman has done, if you looked him up, he would have hundreds of credits.
Yeah.
Because this movie was shot in 9 days. That's it.
I read that.
And it was shot on the back half of his other movie. He allowed Francis Ford Coppola to direct it.
Yeah.
And at that time, Francis was not a known name. He was like a second unit director. He was helping Roger on a cut. They did some like sexploitation 60s movies, you know? And this was just kind of like, okay, kid, show me what you can do. Here's the leftover budget. I think it was like $40,000.
I read that.
Do you realize $40,000 is only twice the budget that Jed used for Unlisted Owner?
That's crazy.
That is crazy, because that has to cover so many things. But Roger Corman was smart. You know, if you film in Ireland, you pay different taxes. It's cheaper there versus here. It just, everything comes together. So.
All right.
But when I learned about this movie, you know, the way that I try to sell it to people is the way that Stephen King sold it to me.
Okay.
And so I was like, okay, if Stephen King says this is a good horror movie, I have to see what's up with that. They're talking about it on Turner Classic Movies. I hope they air that movie. And so I went into the cable box menu. I searched it up, and it was playing that month because this was like a you know a horror thing.
Yeah.
And I scheduled it, and I recorded it, and I watched it, and I absolutely fell in love with it. And on that version, it was in high definition because it was HD cable, and you know it filled the screen completely. It was beautiful.
Yeah.
And I know the difference between standard and HD. I'm being serious. It was HD. But since then, I, you know, you can buy this movie on Blu-ray. It finally got a Blu-ray release, I think 2017 or something, but that's before, you know, I had saw it before, so it was only on DVD and VHS, and the quality is so not the one I saw on Turner Classic Movies.
Right.
And so it wasn't until being able to get this 4K resolution to go, oh, I can't wait, this is the perfect time. And then knowing that it's only been out for like 30 days, I'm so glad we chose to do
this. That's awesome.
And I got to share my Stephen King stories. That's pretty cool.
That is crazy, though. So this was one of the movies that kind of inspired him, or that he just
about seeing it and just knowing a thing or two about, I don't want to say the business, but, you know, a couple of the names or whatever. But the movie just kind of coming out of nowhere and it being very haunting. And for all, and I think this movie even had a different title originally, or it's at least in the UK, I think, known as The Haunting and the Hunted or something, which I think is a very appropriate title.
True.
And so originally they were going to settle on Dementia as a title, but in 1955 there was already a movie called that, and so they were like, well, what else can we do? And so they came up with the idea of Dementia 13, which is a dope name.
It
rolls
off
the tongue. And then we actually get a little reasoning in the movie of why the number 13, but I'll go ahead and sum it up by what you said earlier of there's not much to the plot, because IMDb reads, shocked by the death of her spouse, a scheming widow hatches a bold plan to get her hands on the inheritance, unaware that she is targeted by an axe-wielding murderer who lurks on the family's estate. And that's it.
That's all you get.
And you get a solid, and again, I mentioned how the runtime was perfect. This is a solid 1 hour 15 minute, 1 hour 6 minute.
Oh yes, I don't know how they fit
murder
so
mystery,
into such
and it's
a short
so good.
Time.
That's and that's going to get into scenes we don't like. Is
true.
There are so many scenes I like in this movie. They don't waste no time.
They
feel like
not.
Everything is, it's eventful enough. You know what I mean? Like, I'm not going to say every scene is action packed or tense building or is necessary, but nothing felt wasted to me because I was attached to every moment.
Yeah.
What do you think about the scenery of this movie? Because it's really like two things. First, I mentioned it's filmed in Ireland because it's on set.
Yes.
But it was filmed at the Howth Castle, which for the purpose of this movie, it's called the Halloran Castle because that's the family's last name. But we only get like two places. We get the castle, and then we get a little scene at the pub. So,
oh, that's right. I was thinking it was all at the castle.
Yeah, well,
right.
You know, there was a scene where we had to throw back some drinks and, you know, some shots. Yeah, I'd roll in there and be like, kapla, and get me a bottle of Klingon blood wine.
Oh, no.
But no, what'd you think of the castle as a setting?
I liked it a lot, especially in the black and white. Mm-hmm. Castles are always kind of haunting, even if they're nice castles.
You know another castle is haunting?
Big.
William Castle.
William Castle, yes.
Go ahead.
But no, it was, I mean, it already is kind of a scary place. I mean, castles are big, there's, you know...
Dark.
Darkness, sometimes dungeons, so, you
black
know...
Cats.
Black cats. So you have that whole kind of creepy factor just in the setting alone.
Nowadays, it's very much looked at as a gothic setting.
Yes.
And that's something that they did in the 60s a lot with Hammer Horror.
Okay.
Which, when I say Hammer Horror, I know you kind of red flag, like, you kind of know, you kind of don't know.
Yeah.
Mostly because I haven't taken down that road yet.
Right.
I did mention that it was kind of like reinventing the wheel of like Dracula and Frankenstein. But being the Hammer Horror, they also had the gothic castle settings. Like they revamped it. It's all in color in the 60s.
But
it looks really good. And that's something that Roger Corman did with Vincent Price at the same time. Had the very gothic Edgar Allan Poe stuff. So
yeah. Now I have a question for you. This was in black and white. But they had color at this time. Did they shoot it in black and white, do you think, because of the budget?
Or? Oh, absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely. Well, and I know there's another movie you've never seen, and we will get there. And I'm trying to be careful in what I say, but
sure.
I will tell you, I'm going to tie three movies together for you real quick and really paint this picture for you. All right, see this? This is my painting brush. Yep, I'm setting up my easel right here. Don't look at me like I'm Gene Kelly. All right. I'm going to paint a picture of a movie that came out around 1960 and shocked the world.
Okay.
You've never seen it, but it's regarded as one of the greatest horror movies ever.
Okay.
Psycho.
Oh, yes.
Okay, and so that's an Alfred Hitchcock thing.
Right.
Alfred Hitchcock was really quick to adapt the novel, make the movie, and shock the world.
Okay.
So at that time, everybody needed to make a cheap version or another version of Psycho.
Gotcha.
Okay.
All right.
William Castle wanted to do Psycho, but he was busy.
Oh.
Dropped the ball, didn't get to do it.
Ooh.
Alfred Hitchcock did it.
Yeah.
So guess what William Castle did instead?
What?
Homicidal.
Oh, and we just watched that.
We did watch it, and that was my second watch, and it's still good.
Yes.
Probably have to do that soon, too.
That was a good one.
It was really good. So at that time, another movie came out that tried to kind of get in on the vibe, and it was called Dementia 13. So the point, everything was being compared to what Alfred Hitchcock was able to do. And Alfred Hitchcock is oftenly regarded as a brilliant filmmaker. Not saying, oh, he writes his own material. Oh, he does this. It's the the guy knows cameras.
Okay.
Right. He makes really good movies, but at least in every Hitchcock movie I've seen, his cinematography has never been bland.
Mm.
Like, he's not behind the camera doing it, but he directs well, you know?
Yes.
And I think you see that in a lot of these movies is everybody's taking risks, because I think cinematography wasn't even anything anybody talked about till Citizen Kane came out. So that's why people go crazy over Citizen Kane. Like, it's a brilliant movie, but the camera moves so much, it's not like a steady...
It was very creative.
It was very creative. Hello, Orson Welles. But, back to this.
Yes.
So the scenery of this stuff was good, but the cinematography I thought was excellent as well. And to answer your question, you notice I'm dancing a big old circle. I'm coming back to what you asked me about the black and white.
Yes.
The one thing I've always loved about black and white movies, besides the creepy gothic setting, is I would say it's two things.
Okay.
One, everything that looks fake now looks less fake or doesn't look fake at all.
That is true.
And then two, you can be so much more violent when you don't have red blood.
Oh, I never thought of that.
Do you know what they used for blood in Psycho?
No.
Okay, so I'm not going to tell you anything about the movie to ruin anything for you.
Yeah, don't ruin it.
But
still want to see it.
The Psycho's in black and white.
Okay.
Okay, it's a black and white movie. Well, you can't use, like, red food coloring because that shows up pink on black and white film.
Oh.
So they use Hershey's chocolate syrup.
Weird.
And that shows up, you know, and it's probably diluted with water, but
That would have been amazing.
Yeah, well, stop eating the cereal. Like, I'll lick
stop
in your lips.
Stop eating the blood.
Yeah, that'd be hot. Anyways, Fantasy Island, here I come.
Oh, man.
But think about the brutal scenes in this movie, which, spoiler for me, I mean, my favorite scene in the movie, when we get to scenes we like, is the nightmare pond scene. And I told you that when watching it.
Babe, yeah,
this
did.
Is my favorite part. And I'm sure you probably at first were like, and why? And then I heard you react like, oh, and I'm like, mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So, but I'm with you. The castle scene was awesome. Mm-hmm. I liked the pub scene because it took you away from the castle just for a few minutes.
Yes.
You didn't know where the story was going to go.
No.
But also, it allowed our characters to be, what's the word I'm looking for? Not innocent, but very susceptible to being manipulated.
Yes.
And it worked.
Yeah.
As we'll get into. But speaking of, let's just get into characters because I'm ready. I keep wanting to jump the gun.
So exciting.
I know the format of the show because I've been doing it forever. But let's talk about John, somebody that we only see in the beginning of the movie for a few minutes. John Halloran, he's in a rowboat.
Yeah.
And he's with his, I assumed, fiance, but you know, in the movie, she's credited with the last name,
wife.
So it's his wife.
Right.
But his family acts like they didn't even know her. So I get this is the first time they're meeting.
Yes.
But it almost felt like, I guess maybe because he went away to get married.
Yeah, well, he went to America, I guess.
Yeah, he did.
Right, and got him an American woman.
I got me one of them.
Yeah, he did.
Okay, so let's talk about John Halloran. What do you think about him?
He was so short-lived in this movie.
Like, pun intended.
Yeah. There wasn't much to think about. He seemed kind of pretentious. I mean,
okay.
He seemed like this rich, like,
oh, well,
you know, which he was.
You see why, yeah.
But he also didn't seem to care too much for her. Mm-hmm. You know, when she mentioned, I don't like that music, I can't remember exactly what she said.
Oh, yeah, he was jamming.
Then he just turns it up.
Yeah.
So he's kind of like, whatever, screw you. I'm doing what I want to do. So it was very almost antagonistic against her for the very few minutes we saw of them together.
That scene, every time I watch it, I look at it in two different filters. You just watched that for the first time, so mm-hmm. you were only able to watch it under one filter, and that was not really thinking too much, just watching to see what happened.
Yeah.
When I go on a rewatch, the whole thing I'm wondering now is, did he go on that boat without pills on purpose? Do you think he wanted to die? Because, you know, originally it looks, okay, it's kind of innocent. I'm just in midnight rowing.
He said he wanted to go alone, too, which I thought was interesting at the beginning.
He probably said that to make her go.
And then she went. But it almost makes me think, like, did he want to really, truly go alone? And she's just...
Do you think maybe he was going to go die out there?
Yeah, that's what I wonder.
So, guys, in this movie, John's in the boat, and he's got his radio with him. He's rocking and rolling, and it's like midnight. It's creepy. It's out on the lake, and Luis is with him, and Luis is your typical Alfred Hitchcock blonde. I'll say it because Alfred Hitchcock loved to cast blondes, and this she would have fit in any one of the movies. And she was played by Luana Anders, who had a very, very successful career. John, not so much in acting. He only did a handful of things. Hmm. But Luana went on to do several things. But it's such an ironic scene because he has a heart condition, and he's getting all riled up because he's, like, rowing really hard and fast.
Yeah.
It could have fooled me, but I know that was in the script, so he's rowing really hard and fast. And he starts to have, like, a heart attack, and he falls back, and she's like, stupid. She's all mad at him.
Yeah.
That's how you know. Julia, I want to let you know, Gold Digger was born right here. This is when we were first introduced to the idea. Oh, okay.
Oh, no.
She messing with a real rower.
I mean, she didn't want money.
She did. That's all she was about.
She was focused on money.
And so she's like, where are your pills? And he's like, in my coat. And so she reaches his coat, and the bottle's empty. And then she's like, you idiot.
Right.
And I expected him to go, ha, 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 like, joke's on you, you know? But that was and then he's like, you better row faster, because if I die, you know, you're no longer
you're
in the will.
Yeah.
And that's what we get in introduction, is that the first things that come out of her mouth are, I'll go with you. And then she's like, that wheel was trash.
Yeah. She's all about the money, and he's all about antagonizing her.
Which most married couples get to that point.
True.
You know,
True.
But that's our introduction to them. And I gotta say, I was immediately turned on at this point in the movie because she just looks around for a minute. She dumps anchor. She dumps him.
Yeah.
She throws that radio.
There wasn't much thought. It was like,
and yeah, it was done. And I was just like, oh man, she's gonna be a murderer. This is cool.
Right.
And I was in the music, not on the radio, but the actual score to this movie. The music is cool.
Yep.
Oh, it was really cool. Love it so much. And even though we said that this movie was filmed in 9 days, they talked about they wrote it in like 3, and then the music was composed just on the back half of finishing their other track. And I'm like, this is geniuses at work.
Yeah, and that doesn't sound like much. You're like, oh, it's probably not very good if they wrote it in 3 days and filmed it in 9 with this low budget.
Mm-hmm.
Eh. But I'm telling you, they did a lot with very little. It is impressive.
You want to know another movie that was wrote in just a couple of days?
Sure.
Scream.
Oh, wow.
The original Scream, written by Kevin Williamson, was literally wrote over the course of a weekend.
Dang, and look what that turned into.
No kidding. Can't wait for part 5. January, yay. Here we go. So she ends up going to the estate, knowing he's dead, but going to lie to the family saying he went on a business trip.
Yes.
And we get to meet all the characters.
Yeah.
And so the first person who actually... Oh, no, actually, when she shows up, it's so weird because she, like, disposes of his baggage and stuff. Oh, he would have taken his typewriter and everything.
Like, if he was going on a trip, this is what he would take. I need to get rid of this stuff.
Well, we get to meet the brothers. And so we learned that John was kind of the middle brother. He has an older brother and a younger brother. And the older brother is named Richard. And Richard's played by William Campbell. And Julie, what did you recognize Richard from?
Star Trek.
Yeah, he was.
The original series.
In 2 episodes, actually. Now, I told you about one, and you were really quick to be like, yep, that's him.
Yes.
And that's because he's the main character in it.
Right.
Squire of Gothos. Everybody knows he's Trelane. He's basically the Q of the original series.
Yeah.
Really awesome.
That's
a good
cool
episode. But he's actually in another episode that
really?
I really adore that you just need to rewatch.
Okay.
Trouble with Tribbles, isn't it?
Oh, yeah, I do need to rewatch that one.
Yeah, he's no stranger to the world of sci-fi,
awesome,
horror, and a whole bunch of TV.
Great also actor.
He is a great actor, and he's great in this.
Oh,
he plays the oldest brother, and he's a sculptor.
Yeah.
And you know about sculptors, unless you're one of my listeners, you're weird.
Oh, no!
I'm just saying because I can't sculpt. So.
I was going to say, I can... Well, I can't sculpt.
You can
that
sculpt?
Well. Maybe.
Well, this is news to
like
me.
I can.
Make me something right now.
I will.
You're lucky we ate all the mashed potatoes.
No, but he was kind of one of those, like, brooding, like, artists, though. He was very...
Naturally.
...angry and just kind of... You almost thought he was crazy.
Well, and I think there's two things to this character. There's one, the idea that... He's a red herring, like, oh, he could be the killer in this movie
because
he's the brooding guy who works with tools and he's got to have a secret to hide.
Mm-hmm.
But also, he's the innocent one because we learn he's just dealing with his crazy mom.
Yeah, that's
true. And this hostile environment that he's grown up. And I think any artist has the depression and has that struggle with work, trying to get that creative thing out. But also, I think he's just in love with his soon-to-be wife,
he
can't get the respect from his mom about it.
Yeah, she does not support.
No, she doesn't. We'll learn more about that. But let's go over to the younger brother, who is
Billy.
I know I'm not saying it because the
so
whole
bad
time. And Billy's played by Bart Patton, and Bart Patton didn't really go to be an actor. He kind of dabbled in a handful of things, even some behind-the-camera work.
Oh, nice.
But I would be probably correct to say this was just, like, his best thing.
And that's okay.
And that's because I love this movie.
He was good, too.
He was a great actor.
Yeah, and I will say, for all of the actors and actresses, there was no one that stood out as, like, bad. They were all...
You don't think anybody phoned it in? You were like, hey, I sold it to you?
Okay. No, absolutely.
So, what did you think of Richard's newlywed wife, Kane? Which I'm just like, her first name is Kane, K-A-N-E. That's awesome.
That is cool. That is different.
Because Billy picks her up at the airport and brings her home. And
right.
I remember for a while, I was like, is Billy being nice or is Billy attracted to Kane? Because there were some offbeat scenes.
Right.
And again, they're just throwing several things at you. You really don't know who or what to look at.
Yeah.
But I really liked her because she seemed to really care a lot about Richard.
Oh, yeah, she did. And even when she had moments of doubt, they were quickly put aside. And she's like,
oh, well, yeah, she forgave him at the drop of a hat. I'll never doubt you again, Richard.
Yeah. She was very much stood by his side and was his probably biggest supporter.
Yeah, absolutely. I'll tell you, the one character that was really weird was the mom.
Oh, yeah, she was a little off.
I don't think we ever really got her first name because they called her Mother and Lady Halloran.
Yes.
Yeah. And she, how do I say this? She had this, like, it was almost like Catholic lady vibe.
Sure.
Where she was very to herself, spiritual, except in this, it really was spiritual because she is mourned by the death of her daughter.
Yeah.
And what we forgot to tell you guys is Luis went to visit the family, not knowing that at this time of the year is always the ceremony for Kathleen. And probably because John never loved Luis, he didn't tell her about Kathleen. So the real was went out to Kathleen. Luis is like, your mom's crazy. She made up this name, Kathleen. Who is that?
Right. Like, well, we find out. All her money to.
Right. Like, charities in the name of Kathleen.
Yeah.
But Kathleen's the daughter who died. And it says that Lady Halloran gave birth to her at age 40. I think that she was, what, 7, 8, something like that? She's pretty young when she died.
Yeah, very young.
But it's a very sad story. Oh, and she is traumatized this whole movie. And I don't know which way to look at it as to why she doesn't like girls, per se, females. Like, either she hates her sons and she doesn't want them to be happy, she doesn't want women to steal her sons away, or just because her daughter died, she now, like, is disgusted by women.
Yeah, well, I wonder, too, if she just, if she lost her daughter, she doesn't want to lose her sons to someone.
But never thinking that she's gaining a daughter-in-law. Or maybe she's like, I don't want another daughter. Yeah. I had a daughter.
I think
it's deep.
I think she was so hurt by the loss that she had kind of lost a few of her marbles. So.
Oh, no doubt. Dementia.
Dementia, for sure. So
we get to meet the doctor. Speaking of lost marbles, someone's got to treat her. We get to meet Dr. Caleb, who, what did you think of Dr. Caleb as a character?
I liked him.
Okay.
Especially in the beginning when he was first introduced. I'm like, oh, someone who's normal, who has their sensibilities about them. But by the end, and things he was doing and saying, he seemed just as crazy as the rest of them.
Oh, so. Yeah. Makes you wonder if he was in wanting the family fortune, too.
Yeah, I was just like, what has he got on that? Like, he is trying to get something out of this. I don't know what, but
Dr. Caleb is played by Patrick McGee in this movie, and he is a face that a lot of horror fans will recognize. He's in movies like Die, Monster, Die, which is a movie I love based on the H.P. Lovecraft story.
Okay.
The Color Out of the Space. He's in Clockwork Orange. I know you know the name.
Yes.
Which is a Stanley Kubrick movie.
Yeah.
But he is also in The Black Cat, the Italian version.
Okay.
From, I think, 71, if I'm not mistaken. But it's funny thing is I just watched that movie this year.
That's crazy.
So I was just like, oh, that dude.
Aw, that's really
cool. And that's
cool.
A fun movie.
He's in a lot of good stuff.
Because that movie's like a giallo movie. Remember I told you giallo movies are the ones that are, because giallo's Italian.
Yes.
It's the ones where they're like usually murder mystery whodunits, but it's always point of view, and you always see the killer wearing like black gloves, and you see their hands commit the murder, and at the end you have to figure out whodunit type
really
deal.
That's cool.
It is. I'm going to take you down the Dario Argento road.
I'm excited about that.
Yeah, it's going to be great. But he's also in a movie called The Skull.
Okay.
Which is right there.
Okay.
And it's a movie that I told you I love. Okay.
Yeah.
Now, ironically, The Skull stars Peter Cushing.
Okay.
And Christopher Lee.
Wow.
Peter Cushing and Christopher Lee are huge in the world of Hammer horror.
Mm-hmm.
Huge.
Yeah.
So much so that one plays Dr. Frankenstein, the other plays Dracula.
Wow.
And Mummy and several other things.
That's awesome.
Now, you're probably asking, what does that have to do with anything?
Right.
What character, if you remember, I'm putting you on the spot, did I tell you that Caleb really reminded me of in this? He's wearing like a trench coat and he shot him.
Oh, Loomis.
Dr. Loomis from Halloween,
yes.
Right?
Yes.
Did you know Christopher Lee and Peter Cushing were the first two choices for Dr. Loomis?
What?
Yes.
Dang.
Look at that tie-in.
That's cool.
And what makes it really cool is that Donald Pleasance, who accepted the role, is the only Dr. Loomis. I mean, I would have liked anybody, but seeing Dr. Loomis, you can't unsee it. He's perfect.
True.
But what's really cool is that those three guys had done several movies together before in the past.
That's
so it kind of
cool.
Keeps it in the family. I love it.
Huh.
But Christopher Lee went on to say that the biggest regret in his career was turning down the Halloween movie.
Aww.
And I'm like,
understandably.
Rightfully so.
Dang.
But, and we have a handful of other characters in this movie, but those are our main ones. And now we can get into so many discussions because this family is weird.
Yeah.
This is like an Amityville 2 family where you really don't know what's going on and everybody's kind of out there.
Yeah.
But I love what's going on because this is a 1963 movie that's planting the seed early that there's an axe murderer and it could be anybody and anybody can be killed.
Yeah.
But that's what gets us to favorite scenes because it is when somebody gets killed.
That's so true.
This is the scene that they showed in that documentary. And I was like, that was amazing. And it's definitely at the point where this movie like really goes horror because the scene for 1963 black and white is pretty graphic.
True.
But I feel like it's so perfectly put together and it's such a terrifying sequence. What do you think of the pawn scene?
Oh, yeah. Well, like you had said earlier, when we got to that scene, you quickly told me this is my favorite scene. And so I'm watching it and I'm thinking, okay, it's in the water. I know you don't like water and things in the water. And so that's what I was thinking. It's like, oh, it's because it's in the water and something's going on. But then...
Yeah, that's just the lead up.
She's putting these... So again, she's... Let me set it up a little bit. She's putting these dolls from Kathleen, who has died, in the water to try to mess with the mom's mind.
Because she's gone.
Yeah. And so while she's in the water, then all of a sudden she sees Kathleen
in creepy.
The water. Just like,
you see why I don't do it?
What? And again, this is the pond where Kathleen died.
Mm-hmm.
And so, and the scene itself is just, it's quite...
It's got that like beautiful underwater photography, not so much in the vein of Creature from the Black Lagoon, but almost in tribute too, because they go under and they're with Luana Anders, who's swimming, and you see it on her face first.
Oh,
she sees something and she is startled.
Fear.
And then we see that it's the gravesite and the body of Kathleen.
And the body of Kathleen.
Oh, man. And so she swims up and, she's safe, right?
Not so much. She swims up to get out, and a big old axe comes chopping down at her.
It does. And it, guys, this isn't a quick cut. Like, this is something that goes on for about 15 seconds where she's just getting steadily hit with that axe. Hacked is a great word. She's getting hacked. And you just see that blood going kind of across her body, but also like spreading out in the water. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, that looks so awesome.
Yeah.
And then when her body gets pulled out, she's getting dragged through the grass. Again, we don't know by who, but we know she's no longer the murderer.
Right. Because
she's the murderer.
One of the prime suspects in the beginning.
Well, she was, because it showed that even though she didn't kill him,
right,
she just hid the body.
Yeah, but that was very shady.
Well, and that's the kind of person she is, because she basically understood that the mom thought she heard and saw Kathleen everywhere. And so she's like, oh, I can play off this. I'm going to make it seem like she's here.
Yeah.
So she's like, you know, sometimes I hear the voices too. It made
Kathleen
the mom latch onto her and like her.
Right.
And then, like you said, set it up. And it would have worked. I'm telling you, her plan would have worked had there not been an axe, you know, murdering psychopath.
That's true. So...
What about you, though? Would you agree that's your favorite scene, or do you have?
Oh, yes. Yeah, that was for sure probably the best scene in the whole movie.
It was. It's the standout sequence on there.
Yeah.
But I also really like the scene where the mom gets attacked. Now, the mom, she makes it.
That was very
She's
creepy.
A fighter. She survives. But, I mean, she goes in this it's almost like a little barn, like a little shack, so to speak. Where I'm guessing it's somewhere
clubhouse.
That
clubhouse.
It was. Like it's like where Kathleen used to play.
Right. It was like where the kids used to go play their little clubhouse.
Little dolls little in there. And then guess what we see laying in there? Kathleen.
Kathleen's in there.
So admit it, as a viewer, you're going crazy.
Right.
Because you're seeing Kathleen everywhere.
Yeah.
Then it refers away because the axe comes smashing through. It kind of destroys the shack like what happens in Grizzly, if you've ever seen that movie. But the mom gets away and collapses. They find her and they treat her back to health. Next day, everybody's like, where's Luis?
Yeah.
And it's immediately turned by other people because one of them's the maniac that, I don't know, maybe she robbed us and left.
Mm-hmm.
And it's funny because at one point the doctor even says something about it, and the doctor is like hated.
Right.
The doctor
doesn't really likes him.
I don't know what it is about him. It's just the way that his character is played.
Yeah.
Just kind of rubs you the wrong way. He's almost got a perv creepiness about
kind
him.
Kind of a little
just
bit.
Almost, it's a very back burner thing that he doesn't put on the surface too much, but it's enough for you to know it's there. It's like you feel the heat. You're like, something's off about you, bro.
It's like,
but it's just because
be
he's a weirdo.
Alone in a room somewhere.
He's just the creepy doctor. What are you going to do?
He's very creepy.
I'd be in a room alone with him. Or I'd be at the pub with him. Remember the pub?
Yes. That was another interesting scene in the pub because it was Billy and the doctor.
Mm-hmm.
And the doctor is just trying to get him smashed drunk.
Right, because he's the youngest one. And he doesn't even want to drink.
Right.
But apparently it's really cold there, which if it's like really cold there,
true.
I'd feel bad for anyone in the pond because
holy
crap.
Oh, no kidding. Yeah. I didn't even think about that, but...
He makes him drink and says, it's warm the bones. Let's sit by the fire, you know? Let's throw back some drinks.
Yeah.
And the doctor, in the beginning of the movie, we find out that he is there to help Lady Halloran with her body.
Yes.
But he's already doing tricks of the mind. So we know he dabbles a little bit in psychology or something.
Right.
And he uses that psychology on Billy in this scene.
Yeah.
Because whether he thinks Billy is the murderer or not, I think he thinks Billy knows who it is.
Right.
Because apparently Billy's been having night terrors forever, and he dreams of his brother throwing him in the pond.
Yeah.
And we see flashbacks of when Kathleen had, like, we don't see the actual reenactment of her drowning, thankfully,
right.
But we see what leads up to it, and it's her and Billy playing, and she falls in the water.
Yes.
And so I guess he has probably talked about this in his dreams before to the doctor. He's a family doctor, right?
Right.
But the doctor takes him out, gets him drunk, gets in his head. And at that moment, we don't really learn much except for Billy's a little off.
Yeah. And that just makes me wonder even more of, like, what is going on with this family?
You want to know something crazy? I'll tie it in again. You know how we talked about Scream?
Yeah.
Billy in the movie's name is Billy Loomis. And Loomis was pulled from Halloween. Wait, do you know where the name in Halloween Loomis was pulled from?
No.
In Psycho, the last name's Loomis.
How crazy.
See, everybody, if you watch these horror movies, and people who make horror movies, they like to throw those in for something. Yeah, it's the kind of stuff that just makes me smile.
Easter eggs.
Easter eggs. Scrambled, dog.
Scrambled.
But it all gets us to the end of the movie,
right.
The climax, if you will, or as some people, as what I read, called it anticlimactic, but you don't want to drag something on too long.
No.
I think the choppy ending works really well.
Yeah.
Because we get the reveal, and we get a satisfying wrap-up, so to speak. So the family's back together, and something about that conversation with Billy is not sitting right in the doctor's head.
Mm-hmm.
And Billy had recited, air quote, right, this nursery rhyme or something about hanging on a hook.
Yeah.
And somehow Dr. Caleb's like, weird, hanging on a hook.
Mm-hmm.
So he goes into the castle to the meat locker, which, sure, why not? They have that.
Right.
They have a castle,
they have
so
everything
sure.
Everything in the castle.
And Luis is hanging in there, and it looks freaking awesome.
Yeah.
She's hanging next to her, like, slaughtered pigs and stuff. I thought that was very effective.
It was, for sure.
And so I originally thought, and I think we're supposed to be led to believe, that he carries her out and lays her at the pond.
Oh, yes. That's
because
what
you
I
just see
he...
the blonde figure laying there.
Right.
And what happens is everybody comes outside. We hear a scream or whatnot. And it's actually not Luis laying there. It's Kathleen. And I'm like, this is the third time we've seen this
dead girl.
What is happening? Like, dude. Are we as an audience supposed to be the ones who have dementia? Like, are we not figuring this out? Well, this is when Billy pretty much, and it's a perfect plan by the doctor, can no longer conceal his guilt that he's feeling.
Right.
And we find out that Billy had killed Kathleen because when he was 13, he had a tussle with his sister and he threw her in the pond, probably intentionally and accidental at the same time.
Sure.
Definitely didn't intend on her drowning, but she dies.
Right.
But he can't take that, right?
He's carrying that guilt.
And so he has... We have this body of Kathleen, and I'm like, this is sick that he's carrying around his dead sister. And then how is she still,
Right, like, she's not decomposed.
Right,
she
thank you.
She still looks...
like she did probably right before she died or whatever. But that it's a movie, whatever, I'm gonna let it go. And what happens is Richard's wife finds her, screams, that sets Billy off. Billy grabs an axe... and he goes to swipe at her and almost hits her right in the face. And it's at that moment that you're like, oh, this makes sense, because earlier in the movie we saw Billy chopping with an axe.
Yep.
And you kind of take it as a red herring or like a yeah, right. But it was it actually was him.
There were
he came
a lot
back
of clues
to it. He's the cray cray in this movie.
But,
our fake Dr. Loomis shows up and he shoots him.
Right.
And he falls in the pond, and so I usually ask, what do you think of the ending? But now that I've kind of re-described it...
Yeah, it was good. I know it was probably, what, about 5 minutes towards before the end of the movie, and we were at the wedding, and there was still so much left unanswered, and you were like, there's only about, you know, 5-6 minutes left, and I'm thinking, how? They still have to solve, like, the mystery of who did it? Who's the axe murderer?
I'm like, no, it just ends.
Was like, that's what I was thinking. I'm like, great, this
that's
is
dementia 14.
I don't like. Right, exactly. Cliffhanger, no. But a lot happens in those last few minutes, and you do find out the killer. And once you do, it kind of all makes sense. And it almost makes you want to go back and watch it again so you can pick up on those clues. Because there were things that it's like, oh, I didn't catch that. Like the nursery rhyme.
Yep.
Or, you know, the fact that he was, you know, chopping with the axe earlier. And so there's all these little things that, because they make it seem like it could be anyone. Because they're all cray-cray. And they all have... ulterior motives for whatever it is they're trying to get, and so it really could be anyone. But when you find out it's him, you're like, oh, it makes so much sense now.
Luis was crazy for the money.
Yeah.
Billy was just fucking crazy.
Yeah, he was.
And for all my horror people out there that know this movie, I'm not going to say it because I don't want to, you know, tell Julie too soon.
Yeah.
But there's another movie out there that y'all might be thinking of about someone named Billy who kills people with an axe.
Oh, no.
And when she sees it, I'll be like, yeah.
Oh, no.
Oh, ho, ho.
Uh-oh.
So, but, I mean, this movie came out in 1963, Julie. It's 58 years old.
Yeah.
How do you feel it holds up?
Pretty good, actually. Has this been remade?
It actually did get a remake a few years ago, but I didn't watch it.
Okay.
I was really excited, doesn't feel the right word.
Mm-hmm.
I guess I was curious
sure.
to watch, to see, but it ended up being not a big release, straight to DVD,
The
trailer looked kind of crummy, and I think since I love this one so much, I was just like, I'm good.
Yeah.
But I'll be honest, if I'm ever on Tubi and I see the remake sitting there, I might give it a watch.
Yeah.
Especially if I can watch like more than one movie in a day, maybe start with that one.
Absolutely. Because I feel like it holds up. It's your classic black and white horror. And so it really has a great storyline. There is great acting. The only thing I could think is that now, if they had a bigger budget to just really go all out on some of like especially the killing scenes, because the one in the water is good and very well done for what they had. But
no one else.
Be really cool.
More people should die.
Well, they could just, you know, really
they could turn, make some changes.
Yeah.
That's cool. Well, originally, when this movie was done, it was produced by Roger Corman. I told you all about Roger Corman and how he makes a profit off of anything and everything. And he's known, you know, sexploitation, he's B-horror, schlock horror, monster movies, bad horror, sci-fi, you name it, whatever, right? The guy. Now, you mentioned Francis Ford Coppola, and this is like, I hope Julie doesn't do too much research, because I want to tell her about Francis Ford Coppola.
Yeah,
so this was
me.
His first actual directing attempt.
Okay.
And it was received so 50-50. I mean, it was often paired with a different horror movie, and this was often the lesser of the two, because the other one was usually done by Roger Corman, so Roger would put his movie kind of above.
Well,
and this one, you know, even though Francis did his best job first time around, Roger still ordered in some rewrites and some reshoots and some recuts. And so often than not, it's usually not the first time director's vision or whatever.
Sure.
So, but he produced it. He gets to do those things. That's why it's sometimes better to go independent. You know, studios change stuff. When this one, it was independent, but the guy who has all the money.
Right.
But the cool thing is now, Francis Ford Coppola is kind of a big deal. He did another movie that we're going to cover on our other podcast called Finnegan's Rainbow.
Oh.
Starring Fred Astaire.
Aww.
So I'm really excited for that.
Yes.
Bring that to the world. And if you guys aren't sure what I'm talking about, we're going to go ahead and plug it right here. We got a new podcast that's about to drop. It's called Classic Movie Conquest, where it's this exact format, but all we do is cover the non-horror, non-sci-fi films from 20s through now. Well, not through now. I would say through '60s, late '60s. Yeah.
You allowed me the '70s.
Yeah, depending on what it is. Yes, but the reason is so we can give all the love for the horror sci-fi to the Terrible Terror and the podcast from Another World, because we're never going to quit doing this. We love that.
Yeah.
And the other one just gives us an outlet when we want to talk about other kinds of movies like Finnegan's Rainbow.
Right.
But it was in 1972 when Francis Ford Coppola hit it big when he made this little movie called The Godfather.
That's where I know his
That's
name from.
Where he blew the world away.
Yeah.
And took everyone by surprise. And then since then, he's done several movies, many different genres, but he did, like, all the sequels to The Godfather. He did Apocalypse Now. Like, the dude wins awards, okay?
Nice.
But that wasn't the part that I wanted to tell you.
Oh.
I wanted to totally just mic drop you.
Okay, here we
go. You may know him as Francis Ford Coppola, the guy who did Godfather.
Yeah.
But I'm going to tell you, that's the uncle of Nicolas Cage.
What?
Nicolas Cage's real name is Coppola. And he changed
really?
It to make it off his own success.
Wow.
Yeah. So Nicolas Cage is the nephew of Francis Ford Coppola.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah.
Hmm.
And now that Nicolas Cage has been doing a whole bunch of crazy horror movies, I think he's right at home.
Right.
So that was the surprise I had for you. Is like, oh, you don't even know that's Nicolas Cage's uncle.
I had no idea. Fun fact.
That is a fun fact. But, guys, this has been so fun. We hope that you're having a great October. We hope that you guys have been hanging out and loving the Hatchet films. Brian's going to be back next week with the conclusion to the Hatchet story with Victor Crowley, which if you haven't seen it, it does stream as of right now for free on Tubi. As long as you're cool with ads, you can watch the rated R version. And we'll be back again in November to do, I don't know what, probably some sci-fi. I'm feeling kind of sci-fi, but as we close this episode out, I just want to say thank you for being here. Thank you for being spooky this season. Mm-hmm. And we got one last surprise for you. Just stick around because we have a special announcement from my favorite podcast in the world, the Fright Club Podcast. Hope and George, take it away.
Hey, this is Hope.
And George.
From the Fright Club Podcast.
We want to thank Phantom Dark Dave and the podcast from Another World for giving us a minute to tell you about our feature film, Obstacle Corpse.
It's the story of a young woman who wants to prove to her survivalist dad that she can take care of herself out on her own. So she convinces her goofy best friend to join her in an elite obstacle course race. But with murderous teammates and a forest full of lunatics, she really is going to have to prove she can survive.
It's a funny movie, and we've already won some festival awards with the screenplay and the short film. And we've put together an amazing team, including one of the greatest practical FX makeup artists in the business.
Now, we just need a little help from passionate horror film fans who want to support independent movie making and women-led horror. Hopefully that's you.
You can find us at Indiegogo.com by searching Obstacle Corpse or find a direct link in the pinned tweet at Obstacle Corpse X on Twitter, Obstacle Corpse Film on Instagram, and on Facebook.
Thanks, Dave.
And thanks for your support.
So you heard it here, Fright Club Podcast making their own movie, and I can't wait to see it. But more than anything else is I can't wait to see all the horror fans come together as a community and help participate in getting this movie going and on the screens so that we can all watch it. So please check out the Indiegogo. There's some cool merchandise. I'm just saying there's perks for everybody out there, whether you're a $1, $5, $10, $100, $500. Whatever you can do is going to help. And just going to say, if I had $1,000, I'd throw it that way because, man, I'd really like to sponsor Kills. But go check out their stuff and check out their podcast. It's a great one.